This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome, everyone. This is Wells Tech, episode 3. I want to say it's 3. Boy, I don't have it in front of me. 339. How's that for a great start? My name is Sally Draper. I am the Wells Technology Trainer, and I'm privileged to co-host the Wells Tech podcast, although today I'm missing my fearless leader, Martin Spriggs, Wells Chief Technology Officer. He's not able to join us for the live podcast today. So you got me running the show, folks, so say a prayer for me, and hopefully it'll all go smoothly. I'm happy to say that I'm not alone running the show, though. I'm actually joined by a whole panel of wonderful techie educators who are going to share their knowledge with us today on a very timely topic. I'll first introduce Gail Potratz, who's joining us from Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin. Welcome, Gail.
Hi, everybody.
I'm in.
Gail has an announcement at school, apparently.
Oh, I think that was me. Sorry.
Okay. So also joining us is Justin Lifford, who's from Winnebago Lutheran Academy. Justin, welcome to the podcast. I think this is the first time you've been on the show.
I think the second. I was at one when I was at the Google Education Summit. But
all right. That's right.
Yeah, it's my second year doing this, so it's pretty new for me.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. Another familiar face to Wells Techers is Jason Schmidt. Jason's joining us from out in the Omaha, Nebraska area. He works for Bennington ISD. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Sally. Hey, everybody. It's good to see you guys again.
Thanks for being here. And then finally, a real newbie to Wells Tech, Jenny Adelmeyer, who is at St. John's in Lomira, Wisconsin. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, everyone.
It's like my own Wells Tech support group. I've got 4 more people with me, so thankfully, since Martin is away. And we have pulled together all this wonderful tech talent on today's education-focused Wells Tech, mainly to talk about school technology planning with an eye for one-to-one computing, supporting multiple devices on your network, that kind of thing. It's a big topic. It's a very timely topic. As the school year winds down, I think many schools are preparing for next year, looking ahead to what kind of infrastructure they need to put in place, what tools they need, you know, how much money it's going to cost, all those different considerations. And Jenny, I think you started this whole conversation off with a group of your techie friends by just sending an email. So maybe you can tell us a little bit of the backstory of why we're actually talking about this on Wells Tech.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you for including me in this. I inadvertently, I guess, created my own support group here. We have about 5 computers in each of our 5 classrooms, and they're all on XP. So then we realized, me very late, that it would be not going to be working so well for us next year, that it would be time to be going ahead and looking into what we could be changing about our system here. And so with that task in front of me, I put a call out to all the techie people I knew, whether I knew them in person or just through email. I took a class with Jason. I know Gail and Justin through different conferences in our district. I happen to be on a couple program committees, so I got access to a few extra techie people. And I just put a question out there saying, hey, this is what's happening at our school. This is what I'm considering. What is laptop versus Chromebook? And, you know, do I buy them all or do we lease them? Where do we get the funding? Is the internet connection that I have now and my bandwidth going to be enough to handle all of this if we went to a mobile lab? And I got so many answers and so much help from all of these people. It was incredible. And that kind of led to this podcast then of, you know, what other people are facing also with this XP issue.
Excellent. Well, thanks for the backstory. And like you said, I think many people are probably in the exact same position as you. I even got an email just yesterday from someone asking identical questions. And I was like, hey, have we got the podcast for you? You have to tune in tomorrow afternoon because that's just what we're going to be talking about. It's just on everyone's mind. And I think you know, it was wise of you to reach out to your peers, and I think that would be one of the things I'd start off with was, you know, look around and see who's around you and see who you can model after, because everybody's working through these same issues. Your peer group, like you said, was very wise, and one of the things that they did was they actually turned your question and all the multiple responses into a shareable Google Doc out on Drive so that other people could edit and add to it. And that's kind of what we used to guide our discussion today was this Google Doc that's out there. So we're trying to summarize the key points. And right away, I think Jason or Gail, both of you could probably answer this question, but you both kind of jumped on the number one consideration. So here you are, you're looking at what to do for your future technology in your schools. What would you say would be your top priority?
I'm going to have to say it again. I think I talk about this all the time, but the idea of planning for what you want your kids to learn. You can't forget about the pedagogy and about the curriculum. That's where you need to start. Just a great example, the whole Project Lead the Way science thing that's kind of big right now. Right now, you can only do that on PCs. So somebody was just asking me for advice about Chromebooks and all ready to move, and I said, before you do this, are you thinking about doing Project Lead the Way next year? Because you won't be able to do it on a Chromebook. So all those kind of things. You got to think about what your curriculum is and what you're planning on to teach the kids, and then go ahead and talk about the device. So, right, Jason?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Gail. You know, whatever it is that you're doing needs to come back to the kids. You know, what's our ideal graduate look like, and then work your way backwards from there. So, you know, if your ideal graduate is somebody who's very proficient in Google Apps, let's say, and can type 60 words per minute, and, you know, you've got this whole laundry list of things, then, you know, you need to figure out how you're going to address that within the curriculum. And then after you figure that part of it out, that's when you look at the device and see how that can support you in what you're trying to do. So, you know, you gotta, like Gail said, you look at the pedagogy and you look at the student outcomes first, and then once you've got those figured out, you figure out what technology you need to support that.
Excellent points, guys. Thank you for putting it all in perspective, because I think that's definitely the starting point for any of these. It's not about let's get the newest, shiniest, brightest device. Our kids need to have this. Our school needs it for PR purposes or whatever. That's not what it's about. It's about kids actually learning something and the device there as a servant to that learning that needs to go on in the classroom. So,
I like
so, okay.
That device is the servant. That's
good. Yeah, very good. All right, so moving on from there then, You've done this analysis, you understand your curriculum goals and that kind of thing. I think Jenny probably alluded to in her email, this is what my internet connectivity is, because all of a sudden, it doesn't matter how great your device is, you probably have to start with that infrastructure, the Wi-Fi connections, how much it can support and that kind of thing. Justin, what's that like for you there at Winnebago? How do you guys address that?
We were kind of fortunate in that we were in the process of doing a network upgrade, so for us to add wireless wasn't as big of a deal. I mean, it was a big cost for us to add campus Wi-Fi, coming from nothing to having our whole building Wi-Fi. We did end up going with the Meraki access points. I think they were mentioned by Jason a couple of weeks ago at your last podcast. While they were a little bit more expensive than some of the alternatives, I love them. I think they were worth it. I think some of the kids were a little disappointed because they were expecting to be able to do whatever they wanted, though. But some of the things that we put into place, like a filter, I noticed, or even just bandwidth caps, have left them a little sad because they can't get on Facebook. But it's been great for education, and it's been great to get our kids on Google Drive. It's been great to use Chromebooks in our classroom. Some of our teachers are really starting to pick it up, and we'll see where it goes next year as we start to grow.
Excellent. Besides just the wireless access, you also probably need to consider printing in that same ballpark, just because your printers aren't going to be directly connected to your computers like they were back in the old days. So there are solutions for wireless printing via your network, and also there's a Google Cloud Print. I don't know if you guys have any experience with that, anybody?
We do both. We have both things going on. And it is a little
phone call line one
sometimes, but you can use your existing network printers. It's not like you have to get all new printers necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, right. in my experience, the cloud print has been it's a little problematic, and you know, especially with a network my size, you know, I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue for much of the rest of this audience. But you know, with a network our size, it's really difficult to manage who has access to what using Cloud Print. So you know, we're going to end up using third party solutions for that kind of thing. But there are things out there that would allow you to print from any device. And monitor how all of that stuff works. But that might be a topic for another podcast.
Yeah. I probably made some enemies. Well, we'll see. As when I put our Chromebooks in, I purposefully didn't give them access to printing. So my purpose with that was to help force teachers to use Google Drive a little bit more. So I'm going the green route, if you will, and say, okay, we're just going to cut all printing. Although obviously kids can still log in on a network computer and print eventually if they'd like to, or if they really need to. So there is the backup. But we're looking into what Jason was talking about, a third-party solution to let a kid print from whatever device. But we're a little bit bigger than your average Wells grade school, I would assume. So.
Okay. I just want to throw out there that we did recently do a podcast with Jason. It was back in February, and it was titled Wi-Fi Chalk Talk. And we talked all about Wi-Fi setup. Actually, Jason and Martin kind of geeked out on me a little, and I was in over my head. So I listened a lot to the technical side of Wi-Fi setup. So it's a really great podcast to reference if you haven't listened to that one. And it also includes an interview with Drew Willems, who's the tech director at Shoreland Lutheran High School, and they're doing one-to-one computing there using Chromebooks more and more, setting up a Chrome Depot where their students are doing tech support for the Chrome devices. They just have a lot of cool stuff going on at Shoreland. So again, if you're in this position and trying to evaluate things, that podcast has two-for-one goodness in it with the Wi-Fi information and the interview with Drew, so check that out. All right, next up on our checklist of considerations then would be to consider security and acceptable use of the devices. So, and I think, Justin, you've already touched on some of that, you know, filtering things out, what the students' responsibilities are, what your staff and faculty responsibilities are with the devices, all of those kind of topics. Anybody have any great advice on those topics?
Well, you know, as far as filtering is concerned, if you receive any kind of federal money, if you do anything with E-rate or anything like that, you have to have something like that in place, or you know, it's just for minimum SIPA compliance and things like that. And honestly, you know, if you have these devices in the hands of kids, you're probably going to want to have something like that in place anyways. Just so they don't accidentally go someplace, you know, just do the minimum kind of filtering on that. You know, we have a lot of conversations in Nebraska in the public school districts anyways about filtering and what should kids have access to and what shouldn't they have to, and so you know that's definitely a consideration, particularly if you've got a one-to-one environment where you know you've got a class set or something like that. Of something, it's impossible for you to keep your eyes on every single student all the time throughout the entire thing. So you want to make sure that they're not, you know, accidentally or on purpose getting to something objectionable. So filtering is definitely something that you need to keep in mind. And there are appliances and servers that you can buy to do something like that, as far as the filtering goes.
I think for our grade schools, for our elementary schools, it's important to remember to use your teachers, to use your people. It's written right into our acceptable use policy. If kids, and this came from before we were one-on-one, but when you're a one-to-one school, and it depends, you know, when you say one-to-one, do you let your kids carry their devices all over the building all day? That would make it harder to do this. And we don't really do that because teachers need to still supervise. So our policy is kind of nobody's on the Internet unless there's a teacher in the classroom. We don't want pockets of kids on the wireless network, you know, sitting in there without somebody supervising. And that may be a harder thing for Jason in your situation to pull that off, or Justin. But on the grade school level, where most of us are, that's still a very realistic thing, I think, to have in your acceptable use policy and make known to your parents that we really train the teachers to be aware that there is this device in the hands of the kids, and there simply has got to be a supervision issue in place.
I guess to play devil's advocate a little bit to the filtering, we're purchasing a new filter this summer, and as I put it in the new policies, I agree that we need to block what we have to block, like to become SIPA appliant, but at the same time, we're looking at how do you teach kids to be responsible online?
Right.
And is it really necessary to block everything, to lock everything down and not allow them the chance to grow? So you kind of have that tug of war going on as what is acceptable and how far do you let the kids go? And that's something to have in every school. So that discussion is where do teachers want to draw the line? Because ultimately it's up to them to enforce it. It's not necessarily just some computer sitting in a server room that's going to enforce your policies every time, because kids will find a way around it. So it's really up to the teachers and the administration and the parents too. Where is the line? What are we going to teach our kids? How are we going to do it?
Couldn't agree more. Right. We don't block everything. It's important to learn to discern, as we used to say. And that's what all people should be teaching our kids to do. So you're correct.
Maybe you guys can speak to this a little bit, those of you that administer Chromebooks through the Google Apps for Education Administration Console. It is true that you can block some things or allow things based on different groups and things, like your fifth graders could have access to certain apps that your fourth graders don't, that kind of thing. Is that correct?
You can go down to even an individual. Say you have a person who did something, a no-no. Okay, so you can take away that privilege just for him, even within the group of the class. So it's pretty specific.
Yeah.
And that would also allow you to roll out things mid-year or whatever it may be as well.
Yes.
Right, yeah. And you can do that. You have that level of control not just with extensions, but also with websites. So you can blacklist, you know, if Facebook is an issue, you can blacklist Facebook, and then none of your Chromebooks would be able to access Facebook if they're in that security group. So, you know, it just kind of depends on what you want to do and how much you want to abuse your power.
And you would never do that, Jason. I'm just thinking. From an administrator standpoint, being able to do that at the Google Apps console is a big, huge selling point for Chromebooks, for using the Google ecosystem or whatever, that that you can administer it so easily from one point and have that kind of control.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Excellent. All right. We had all this lead-up discussion. Jenny, your question was, what do I do with my XP computers? What device should I get? So finally, you've gone through all these considerations. You can talk about devices, and that's another challenge. That's a difficult question given the fact that tablets are very popular. Chromebooks are very cheap. You know, I mean, there's lots of considerations there. So how do you go about making those kind of decisions, and what kind of things should you consider when you decide what device to use?
Yeah, I realized, too, we do have some iPads in our classrooms, and we have desktops where we've been using Windows-based type things for with Office, but we use a little, quite a bit of online programs also, so we felt that the things that we're doing already with the computers, that Chromebooks may be a better choice for us, because with the cost and the mobility and like you said, you mentioned that the Google Admin Console, that Justin walked me through some of that, and it's like, wow, I really do like how those are set up, and we are not a Mac school, so the iPads are a little hard to configure when I'm using Windows-based computers too. So that was one of my deterrents also. And you know, again, I know the next point too is like, okay, well, you know, as far as are the students bringing in their own devices, or are we trying to get something all the same? That was another one of my considerations also.
Yeah, standardizing technology has always been a big thing for me. The more you can standardize things, the easier it makes it for your administrator of technology. And that just really is kind of out the window. All of a sudden we have Macs, and now we are getting PCs in our building for the very first time because of this STEM thing. And the Chromebooks, and so you really end up managing a lot. And that, for a long time, I think, is what stopped people with the BYOD, too. It'd be a nightmare to manage. But some things have happened in the last few years to make those things a little bit easier. So the time is coming when, the days of standardizing devices are pretty well gone.
Yeah, the approach that I just wanted to speak a little bit to what Gail was just saying, the whole idea of standardizing on a device, in my district anyways, we're completely have gone away from that, and we're not standardizing on a device, we're standardizing on services, that's going to be our strategy kind of going forward, and I think that's really got some legs to it, and I'm kind of glad that we didn't go one-to-one, because this is going to be a little bit easier transition, I think, to make than going one-to-one would have been.
Okay. So just to throw out there, as you're having this device decision-making discussion, you have to think about not just the actual device, but the peripheral devices as well, like charging carts. I know for mobile labs, or for just plugging those Chromebooks in every night if you're not sending them home with the kids, charging carts are a big issue to consider. Whether or not you need a server in place to carry out whatever solution you decide on. I know one contributor to the conversation, I think it was Eric Paulson in Watertown, so they're going with one-to-one iPads next year, and they're actually having the students buy those, but they bought Apple TVs and large screens for their classroom because you could easily project your iPad that way, have the iPad, anybody's, the teachers, the students, up on the screen. And so, you know, you have to think of the whole system, not just the particular device is the point there.
A good particular thing that just came out on that same topic, Sally, the smart board people now have developed an app for the Apple iPad that works with smart boards. So that's huge. So, most schools have spent a lot of money putting smart boards into place, and now that's kind of being evaluated again, too, in a certain sense. But smart is smart in putting that thought together to their smart boards through the Apple iPad. So you always have to be on the lookout for what companies are doing, because they're thinking ahead and trying to be aware of those trends. Is hard to do, but kind of important to do when you're making these decisions and spending a good chunk of money.
Excellent. We want to keep going with our discussion and talk just a little bit about financing. I know there was some discussion of that in the email conversation, Jenny, that people threw out different ideas for you. I'm kind of curious how you guys decided to go forward with your financing. Jenny, have you guys made decisions in that regard?
We did, I think are going to try and roll out, it still has to go before the school board, but, and the church council and everyone else that has to okay it, of course, but right now our technology fee was only $25 per child, so we figured we had some room to grow in there, to charge parents a little bit more. Still weren't comfortable with the whole everyone buy their own device and just problem solving, troubleshooting when there's issues, that I felt we would be able to manage a little bit better just for now with buying our own Chromebooks. And we're thinking about doing about 25 Chromebooks. And then for a couple PCs still in the classrooms, we're looking at just getting some refurbished ones, your new egg or something like that. So we around $150 for each, just a couple PCs with Windows 7 already installed on them, and reusing the monitors and mice and keyboards and everything we have. Looked at the Ubiquiti Unify for our wireless system that I know you guys have talked about before, very reasonably priced. And so we put together a number, and then there's congregation members that said, yeah, you know what, we know we need to do this. We would like to donate. So we're hoping between the fee increases a little bit and some donations, we're hoping to find what we need to finance this. And unfortunately, it has to be very soon so that we can be looking at it over summer and get it ready to go for next school year.
Excellent. A couple of points that came out in the discussion were questions around owning versus leasing, and I think there was pretty much a resounding no to leasing. I don't know if that's the idea that you guys got, but that leasing is just in the long run a more expensive choice, that it's better to go with owning your own devices even if you have to put more money out on the front end of it. And kind of parallel that insurance isn't necessarily worth the cost. I heard a lot of people in the conversation saying we fix screens ourselves and that kind of thing. So kind of taking on some of those repair responsibilities locally and not really investing in insurance and those kind of things. Interesting feedback. And I guess, you know, your mileage may vary. Everybody's situation is different. And I probably will just plunge right ahead with the last point we have here, and that is just support. You know, we're support in the tech planning arena, and actually we found some great resources. Let's see if I'm coordinated enough to share my screen differently here. Some great resources online along those lines. Sometimes Hangouts make it a little challenging to share, but I'll have links in the show notes to this Chrome Devices for Education Planning Guide, which kind of looks at how do you make your plans and what kind of things you need to include in those. We found parallel guides from Apple, an iOS education deployment overview, and also a technical reference that are just really helpful in terms of preparing to deploy technology. And then I would be remiss if I didn't make mention of Wells Google Schools, which is a Google Plus community that our friend Jason started. Jason, maybe you want to tell us a little bit about Wells Google Schools.
Yeah, well, this actually started, I teach a couple of classes through MLC that talk about Google tools and how to use those as, you know, first just for personal use, but then also for as an administrator, and I started this actually as part of one of those classes, and then one of my students said, well, you know, hey, can I invite this other person into this, because this would be really useful for them, and I was like, yeah, sure, you know, go ahead, and then, you know, before I knew it, there's, you know, like 120 people in there, so, you know, it's a great resource, everybody who, I see your picture of your Chromebook there, Gail, that's
yep.
Nice. But, you know, David Tess and I kind of go through and, you know, we look to make sure that everybody who joins is Wells and actually has a reason to be there. So, you know, there isn't a whole lot of spam or anything in there, but reach out and ping anybody in there if you want to join the community if you're not already in there. Anybody's welcome. Just let us know, and there are lots of us in there that'll help answer any kind of questions that you might have.
Justin, you're a member, right?
Yes. It's been nice to be able to post stuff every now and then to get a little bit of help. I think I actually just got a response from Gail a while back on something I was looking for. I couldn't figure out.
It's a good place to go. I know lots of willing people.
So ultimately, guys, Jenny has a happy ending to her story. She asked a question. She got great answers, and she's going to her school board this week, right, Jenny, with a recommendation.
Yes. Yep, tomorrow night, so we'll see how it goes through, and hopefully we can move forward with that.
Excellent. Tell them thank you for giving you that challenge, because it helped the Wells as a whole to be able to share this information on Wells Tech. So, you guys
it really did.
Find a summary document that we've put together with all of these talking points, not necessarily all the answers, but at least things that you should be considering as you move forward with technology planning for your schools. And we'll have that link in the show notes, and look forward to your feedback. If there are follow-up questions that people have or whatever, you're welcome to ask them through our Wells Tech regular channels. We're on Facebook and Google+, and you can just leave a comment on the show notes as well. So just have to say tremendous thank you to all of you guys for being willing to talk through this with us. It's a big topic, but very important. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. We will see you again. I think, Gail, you're going to stay on with me for the rest of the show. The others have to run off to other commitments, but appreciate you joining us.
Bye now. Guys.
All right, Gail. So just me and you to finish out Wells Tech episode 339. Yep. Just rolls right off the tongue now, but anyway. We do have an interview to include, as if you haven't heard enough from a lot of different voices today. We are fortunate, Martin and I, to record an interview with James Karlofsky, who's the curriculum director at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. And James is behind an effort coming up in a couple of weeks. June 3rd, there will be a Tech and Teach event. I think Google will be featured at that event. And we're going to listen to James as he tells us more about Tech and Teach at Kettle Moraine. So let's see if I can make this magic happen. We'll play the interview. This is James Karlofsky. He is from Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, serves there as curriculum coordinator, among other things, including baseball coach. Apparently, this is a busy season for you, James.
Yeah, it definitely is. It just came off of another riveting victory today. Keeps
Ooh.
Us busy, though.
Congratulations.
You won. Awesome. So we're going to talk technology and teaching in-service events. You and your call and whatever you want to share about yourself.
Sure. I'm the curriculum coordinator, as you had said, at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. I also teach math there. Family of five kids, as well as my wife, Katie. I serve also as a math instructor, as well as a coach there. And then this past spring, also accepted a call to serve as a professor of mathematics and instructional technology at Martin Luther College, and that'll begin with the new school year.
Very exciting. Blessings on that new calling, and God go with you. That's important work. Speaking of important work, we got connected a few months back as you were considering a conference, actually an annual conference there at Kettle for the local association, but you've kind of broadened its scope, and you call it Tech and Teach. That's scheduled for June 3rd at Kettle, and we thought it'd be great to have James on to talk a little bit about maybe your vision for that event as leading the planning committee. Tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. The conference, as you said, is on Tuesday, June 3rd, and it's designed to help teachers, I guess, first and foremost, incorporate technology into their teaching. That won't be the only focus of the day, but one of the main things our committee wanted to do was come up with ways that not just sitting at a sectional where you're just hearing about it, but you're actually experiencing it on your device in real time. We tried to design a conference that met that need first, whether it's Google, Schoology, iPads, and other things that we might talk about. It also includes a little bit of just a curriculum slash technology focus. For example, have the ability to take an art make and take, where you can leave with ideas that kind of invigorate you coming into the summer and the new school year, as well as hands-on inquiry-based science. But as you mentioned at the start, the primary focus will be technology and incorporating that technology into your everyday teaching and really making it hands-on for a teacher from pre-K all the way up through high school.
So, James, I understand you have an association of schools there connected to Kettle Moraine, and in the past maybe these end-of-school-year in-service events have been really focused on your association. Who should be attending this particular event?
Yeah, as you said, in the past it had been just our association of about 100 to 150 teachers, but this year we wanted to broaden the scope. Kurt Gosdeck from St. Lucas and Kewaskum and myself have kind of brainstormed this conference and made it so it's, you know, technology coordinators from any school would definitely benefit from this, because there's an administration side of some of the sessions as well as a hands-on. Just kind of invigorate what you're doing and make it better. You know, the technology wave is just kind of all around us, and you feel like there's things I want to tweak and play with, but I don't know where to start. That could be you. But I guess I'll go back and say, really, if you're a teacher that's looking to add new ideas and tinker with some technology things going into the summer where you can actually play and start building some lessons off of it, this would be a good conference for you to attend.
So in looking at the workshops that are available, there's kind of a Google flavor to it, and I'm assuming that that's because a number of the schools in your federation are rolling out Chromebooks or using Google Apps. What are some of the things that you think are going to be the most popular as you look at what you have available there?
Yeah, the main reason why this conference began in the first place was our principals really were hankering for help with, as you said, incorporating that one-to-one classroom and those ideas. You know, in our federation, we had quite a number of schools that have moved to that one-to-one Chromebook model or bring-your-own-device model and wanted ideas from it. Now, one of the main reasons that Google was a focus of this conference is because our principals had been leading their schools kind of into a one-to-one Chromebook initiative. About half of our schools in our federation had done that. Some of the most popular sectionals that we would anticipate were basically using the various Google apps, things like presentations, docs, forms, sharing, and general things like that. But we knew that there would be some schools that maybe weren't going to completely implement Google. For example, a lower grade classroom that would like to use iPad. So we were able to bring in some experts for things like that as well.
So if somebody wanted to learn a little bit more, if they're considering coming, what would be the best way for them to figure that out?
The most of the information that you can see would be on our website, which is listed in the show links for the Wells Tech podcast. Through that website, you can find information about the schedule, the sessions, specifically who's teaching them and what the focus for each of those would be. All of those are linked on that website, on the tab or the ribbon near the top
sure.
of the website.
And is there a cost to the conference?
Yes, there's a $30 cost per participant for the conference, which includes your four sectionals. It will also include lunch as well as a light breakfast as you come in. Most of the conference will be located in our new Performing Arts Center at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, which is a kind of a neat way to show outsiders, you know, a beautiful facility that we have at KML.
And we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Martin and I are planning to attend, and actually we're going to be doing a live Wells Tech podcast at the end of the day, so you'll hear firsthand our experience at the conference, and maybe we'll get some of the participants to join us on the podcast and tell us what they learned during the day.
Yep. I think these kind of conferences are really necessary, this hands-on rather than kind of the show-and-tell approach, where you're actually maybe building something. People are walking away with something that they've actually crafted, and that's really only possible because the infrastructure now exists. You know, Kelly, you've got a good technology director and good solid Wi-Fi, and I think people are ready to kind of bring their devices in there and get going. So that's a key, I think, to the success of these kinds of things, these kinds of conferences.
Definitely looking forward to the day there, James, and blessings as you continue to prepare for it. We'll be happy to meet you face-to-face on June 3rd and hopefully meet a lot of Wells Techers there as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, as you mentioned, definitely can bring your own device, and it'll be a worthwhile event that you can come home with a few things that you can take and use and implement right into your class in the next school year.
Excellent. Great.
Thanks for staying up late for us, James. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, Gail, I've done some late-night Wells Tech interviews before, but that was one of the latest. Poor James, I think he had baseball every night last week, we didn't record till about 9:30 at night one night. So.
Oh, that was a great interview, and I love the name.
Yeah, Tech and Teach. I'm really looking forward to being there. I should share my screen. James showed it during the interview, but we'll definitely have a link in the show notes, and would enjoy meeting you there. Martin's going to do a presentation breakout session, and I'm covering Google Forms. So looking forward to presenting as well as to broadcasting Wells Tech Live from the Tech and Teach event. So
I have to mention that. Are you hearing an echo?
Yeah, just a little.
All of a sudden, I don't know why.
I'm not sure what would have changed, but are you going to be able to be at the Tech and Teach event, Gail?
No, I would love to go to it, but by the time I had heard of it, I'm already committed to in Green Bay. I'm going to be teaching there days of work, Chromebooks, and the person who asked me to do this for him is James' brother, Ben.
Oh.
So those two boys should have gotten together with him, because I would love to be attending that one, and even for his faculty to come down there, too. They're just beginning, so we'll have 2 days of some good time up there doing kind of the same thing, I hope, as you're all doing, but I will miss not seeing everybody there. It would have been fun to be there.
Very good. Hopefully your sound problem cleared up. I think that was my mistake. Trying to cover for Martin's audio and video expertise here, and it's just not the same, Martin. We need you. So, anyway, I was thinking along the same lines, if you're just getting started, if you're like Jenny, maybe ordering your first Chromebooks this summer, this would probably be a good conference to get your toe in the water and see what you can do with those Chromebooks in the classroom, because I know there will be quite a bit of Google information shared, as well as iPad and other information, as James said. So looking forward to it. All right, Gail. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know that it's a huge thing out there right now. Jenny mentioned that she's on the program committee. One of the committees she's on is for the Wisconsin State Conference at Milwaukee this year. So I'll be able to, I have the opportunity to do two sectionals, one for people who are just beginning and one for people who want a little more teaching connected with the whole Google thing. So I'm really excited about that. So the more ways we can get the word out and help people get these things off the ground, the better. So,
excellent. I think Martin's going to be presenting at the Wisconsin Teachers Conference as well, and I'm actually going to Michigan and Minnesota Teachers Conferences. So it will be a busy October in terms of educational technology. Lots of good information to share.
Yep.
So, busy calendar. All right, Gail, we should probably move on to our tips of the week, and I think I'll lead off with just a little reminder that occasionally I come across websites, and sadly sometimes some of my own, where I realize I've broken my own rules, and that is if you want to share documents in general for the web, the best format for that is PDF. That's the rule I try to go by. I don't generally ever post anything in doc format, like proprietary Word, Microsoft Word format, or other formats, unless I really need that receiving person to be able to edit the document. But otherwise, I usually use the save as PDF options that are available. And then if I'm in a bind, if I'm working on a proprietary format of some kind, like perhaps I'm working with a PowerPoint and I want to make it a PDF or something, and I don't have the option to save as, there's a nice utility called Cute PDF. And basically anything that you can print, you can save as PDF with Cute PDF. It installs on your computer as a print driver. And you just print to Cute PDF. It's one of the printers listed. And when you do, you're saving the document as a PDF exactly the way it would have come out of the printer. So this day and age, you probably don't need this for very many utilities because most things have save as PDF as an option. But if you're in a bind and you need to save something in PDF format for sharing on a website, this is an option for you, cutepdf.com. So that's my little tip of the week, just some encouragement to put things in a format appropriate when you're sharing them on the websites.
Okay. So I'll go ahead with my tip of the week, which is about a piece of software this week. And many of you probably have used Lucent Chart before. It's an app that you can get in the Chrome Web Store, Lucent Chart for Education, and very good charting. And document or diagram maker. The people from Lucid, L-U-C-I-D, have come out with, in this last year, a piece of software called Lucid Press. And it is a pretty cool tool. And what it does is it's kind of the answer to the boringness of Google. You can't really make a very pretty, attractive newsletter in Google. But if you go to Lucent Press and you apply to get an education account, which you can do as long as you have an EDU or whatever, you know, you have to have an education account. We have a .org. I just emailed them and talked to them, and it was fine. So I would encourage you to do that. As we go through time here, we're kind of getting further and further away from third-party things. We're trying to make Google and all the free stuff work for us. This is free. Businesses, there is a pay model, but they have said that they will always keep this free for teachers and students. So it's a great opportunity for a kind of a pages-like look. You can make newsletters and other brochures, that type of thing. And there's a in the Google world, there's usually many different ways to get to these apps and to get them into your toolbox. This is what I would recommend because it works the smoothest. If you think you'd be interested in this, and it is also collaborative, so you can share, you can invite people to work on these things with you, which is pretty cool. Okay, go to their main site and apply for an education account. What I did, then you have to get your students to all have accounts, and there's another page where students one by one can go there and apply for an account. Well, I just wrote in when I had my account, and I talked to them, and I said, this is our domain, and they just gave us an account for our whole domain. So then when I got to the students, I had the students go ahead and just go to the lucid.com page, go to sign in with their Google account, and they were right there. Okay, so very, very handy. What happens then is you want to have them go to their preferences, just like you did on your account, because then you check a little box that says, sync this with my Google Drive. And what happens is you'll get a Lucent, you can do this with charts too, you get a Lucent Press folder right in your drive. Everything you make is in there, and then you don't have to go out to the site. If you're working in Drive and you open that folder, you can work on new things or old things right in Drive. You can work on Lucent Press right in there. So it just interfaces really well with the whole Google Google world, okay? And then finally what I did, I set it up that way for everybody, and then I finally did go on the Google Administrative Console, and I chose the app, and I pushed it out as we do along the bottom, so that the apps are populated along the bottom that we want them to use. So now they have a Lucent Press app down there. When they press on that too, they're taken right into their stuff. If you do that first without going through the whole process that I just explained, then it'll ask them some confusing questions. So don't use the app first. Go ahead and go through the website, set up your account, and then bring all the students in through that way. Otherwise, it'll say, do you already have an account? And it's going to ask them stuff, and it'll be very hair-pulling out time. So,
you so heard it here, why, folks. That's
my
kind of experience that you pay for with the Wells Tech podcast. That's great
right.
stuff.
I went through it all. I hope I explained it well enough, but it really does make a lot of sense to go at it that way. It's going to save you a lot of headaches if you do it that way. And I think you're really going to like this product. A lot of potential.
So basically, desktop publishing in the cloud.
Yep.
Excellent. Very good. Well, Gail, I'm going to hit you up right away for your tip of the week, which I think you were going to tell us about Gmail Labs.
Yes.
And the undo.
Already in the Google framework here. So this is not new, but I don't hang out in Google Labs too often. I just ran across it in a community out on Google Plus, and I thought I would check it out. It is possible to unsend a piece of Gmail. The article was written in case you said something too strongly and you wanted to retract it before it actually got to the person. That's really not what I see as much as an advantage for me. I very often send things and I forget the attachment. So I want to get it back and stick the attachment on rather than send another email. Okay, so this saves you from doing that. So all you have to do is go to your settings. If you're in Gmail, go to the little gear wheel and go to settings. And once you're in settings, go to Labs. And then there's a ton of things there. So I just use the search box and do a search for undo send. And that'll pull it right up to the top of the list. And all you have to do is click the little enable. And then when you go ahead and send an email, that little yellow box that comes up at the top that always tells you that your email's been sent, there will be another little option there that says undo. So in that little yellow box, you can quickly undo. I don't know what kind of time limit you have there, but I usually realize I haven't attached the attachment right away when I send it. So there you go. You can undo it. Neat little trick.
Definitely worth installing on your Gmail account just to give you that option. And you can go back into settings and set the amount of time that the undo option stays there. So basically it doesn't send right away. It waits and gives you that window of opportunity to say, oh, I didn't mean to do that, and push the button and undo it, pops your email right back up. You can continue editing and send it when you really meant to send it. So good stuff. I make use of that when I enjoy that feature for sure.
Yep.
So time for me to share my pick of the week, and it has to do with a webinar that we found out from last week as we were doing our planning for talking about school technology planning, Gail. Maybe it was Martin who mentioned that there was a webinar coming up from Acer. Acer is one of the vendors who makes a brand of Google Chromebook, and basically, they had partnered with a school district in New Jersey to tell their story about implementing Chromebooks in a one-to-one setting. I think they're a little bit larger than any of our Wells schools. I want to say they piloted it with 400-plus students, and they're looking to roll it out to like 12,000 students from grades 3 through 12 in their school district. So it was really interesting to hear their experience. It wasn't all rosy or whatever. I mean, they were pretty honest with the challenges and the positive things that happened throughout the process. And again, it kind of went through that same line of thinking that we talked about at the beginning of the show, Gail, where they dealt with wireless issues and deciding on different platforms and all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, at the end of the webinar, though, which I thought was the biggest value to me, the presenter, this tech director from New Jersey, shared a folder, and I will have the link in our show notes, and it's a folder full of many of the documents that they used as they went through this process, including Chromebook use and security procedure agreement forms, different forms that they had staff follow, checklist and procedures and all kinds of things that they wrote up about cart maintenance and student Chromebook, that one's not going to come up, but forms that they used with the students. One thing they said was they locked down the Google App Store. They didn't give the students access to that, but they did allow them to ask for certain apps to be included because you could, on an app-by-app basis, allow things in their Chromebook store. So there's different ways that they went about that. There's staff acceptable use policies here. Looks like they're updating some of these, so not all of them are displaying a preview, but you can actually just save a copy of this, since it's a shared folder, and have copies of different acceptable use policies and things to make use of. So hopefully, Jenny, you're still listening to the podcast, and this is something that might even be helpful to you there at St. John's and Lomira as you are working through different policies and things around your one-to-one implementation, as well as other people.
It always does amaze me, the parallel. It's just that they have more people. It's the same process. It's the same documents. It's the same thing. It's just that she is working with a much larger group than we typically are, but good stuff. Same
definitely
thing we need. Yeah.
All right. We are running pretty short on time today, Gail, so I think I'm going to forego the community feedback section and just save that for next week's show. You guys, I have lots of great feedback to share with you, but I think we wouldn't do it justice to try and cram it in here at the end of this show. We've covered so much good stuff. The show notes are going to be long enough as is, so we'll save that community feedback for next week. I will tell you that in lieu of having a music download, I have a very special music link to share with you today. Special for a personal reason. Let's see if I can find the right link. And that I was fortunate enough to be part of the Wells Handbell Festival concert this past Sunday. And that concert is archived on the MLC website. And I think it's great music to turn on and have playing in the background just to enjoy. I've listened to it 3 or 4 times already, and I was part of it and practiced all day long on the songs as well. But just a beautiful, beautiful concert, and I think you would enjoy it. So I'm going to include that at the end of the show notes, so look for that on the website.
Right. I want a quick shout-out to any Wells Techer who might be attending the Milwaukee Ed Camp.
And that's coming up this week, or?
It'll be May 10th, and I will be going to that. I'm hoping I'll not be surprised that I'll see some of you there. So I hope that we get to meet face-to-face and talk a little bit and learn some things together that day. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. I'd be really curious to hear about any good finds that you make that day, Gail. So make sure you keep us in the loop on that.
I'll do that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for all that you contribute to the show, Gail. It was wonderful to not have to be a solo act today, and I always enjoy learning from you and the experiences you have there at Emmanuel. So thank you.
You did a good job, Sally.
Oh, you're very kind. So hurry back, Martin. That's my plea. And we will be doing this again next Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Join us for Wells Tech Episode 340, where we will talk about browser wars. I have a co-host that really likes to battle over things. He always likes contentious so that we can be on opposite sides and defend our position. It makes for fun podcasting, and I'm guessing that we do have some differences of opinions about what our favorite browsers are, what extensions we use, and how to optimize our browsing experience. And perhaps we'll talk about it not just for desktop browsing, but also mobile browsing. So all about browsers next week on Wells Tech. You won't want to miss it. You can join us live at wellstechlive.wells.net, or you can always catch the show on the archive show notes webpage, wellstech.wells.net. Leave us your comments and questions, and we'll do our best to address them on the show. Thanks, everyone, for watching. We'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.